for March 12, 2007 will come to order. We appreciate everyone's attendance today. Some of our committee members are missing because of other legislative business, and at least one case business left over from the time that he was a state police officer and is in court today. Others are working on other things. We're going to start today with a work session on House Bill 2198. We open the work session. Madison?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the 2198, we've heard it once on the 7th of February, where we had testimony from several parties, and we had at that time, if you remember, just to refresh your memory, the Chancellor of Higher Education came and testified about what this bill does. And primarily what it does, it takes the money that is now the money that comes from tuition and other fees in higher education is in the general fund. Although it is distinct from the general fund, the amount of interest that accrues out of that money stays in the general fund as well. This bill attempts to take that interest and make it distinct and accrues to the fund itself. Therefore, it will have that distinction into its own. And by doing so, you would have the revenue impact as we look at it as money coming out of the general fund of interest earning to the tune of about $21 million a biennium. However, that is going to become from, if this bill approved and goes through, becomes an other fund's interest income rather than general fund interest income. The fiscal impact until this point I don't have that. However, this is a bill that is subsequently referred to Ways and Means, where at that time they would be looking at these impacts.
Great. Mr. McGee. Thank you, sir, for being here today.
Certainly, Mr. Chair.
Would you identify yourself for the record? And I think some of us may have some questions for you, and you may want to make a statement about the bill.
Mr. Chair, Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services Budget Management Division. I don't have a prepared statement. We'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. I asked Mr. McGee to come forward because it seems to me that there are several policy kinds of questions for us to deal with. I know the Chancellor wanted this bill because he thought that it could increase the efficiency and effectiveness of the university system because of they would then have an incentive to handle their cash flow in a way that reflects the possibility of earning interest as well as the actual operations of their system. I was interested in having Mr. McGee come forward because I'm concerned about what the effect of this is on the budget and management and the difficulty of making these kinds of calculations and what the other implications are other than the one that the Chancellor was raising. And maybe you could address those issues.
Mr. Chair, first of all, this is envisioned in the governor's budget. This is a bill that he reviewed and approved for pre-session filing. It does increase the other funds revenue that accrue to the Department of Higher Education. Our estimate at that time was $19.1 million to be that impact. There is a corresponding $19.1 million reduction in general fund that is recommended for the department as a result of that. So for the 07-09 biennium, that fund shift would result in this being a budget neutral bill for the university and for the general fund overall. In the future, the university system does believe that it will be able to manage these funds in a way that will be beneficial to them. That may or may not be true. It may or may not grow faster than the general fund revenue grows. I mean, that's something we'll see over time. But I think the governor also did believe that there was an equity issue here in the sense that the largest proportion of these funds do come from tuition fees paid by students. The rest is indirect grant support from federal and other grants or sales and services, other types of revenue sources. But I did believe on the whole that this made sense for the students and did make sense for the university system and at least in the immediate future did not impact the general fund negatively.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Yeah, question. You say tuition and fees. We think of tuition as the big enchilada here. How much is fees? Are we encouraging universities to charge fees so they can feed their fund?
Ms. Chair, Representative Berger, the fees are about 9 to 10% of the tuition amount overall in the current budget, and I think the Ways and Means Committee does tend to look at that. In the past several biennia, there have been legislatively imposed caps on the amount of tuition that could be increased through a budget note. I think your Ways and Means probably will be interested in doing that again. Those primarily affect resident undergraduates, but they do look at the tuition rates that are charged to all students. With the governor's proposal for an affordable and predictable revenue source for the system, the proposal would be that in the long term tuition would be capped at the increase in the median family income. So that would be again a long term proposal as well. So both the governor's office and the legislature have traditionally looked very carefully at tuition and set some limits for those. We'd assume they'd do so in the future.
Paul?
This is strictly a higher ed. This does not impact community colleges and their fee and tuition.
Ms. Chair, Representative Berger, as you know, community colleges are local government units. They're operated by local community college boards who impose and retain all the tuition. They do not go through the state's the books at all.
So in that sense, this is a catch-up bill.
One could look at that way, Mr. Chair.
Comparable fund handling. Now, this bill would also apply, would it not, to room and board charges, to rent in the married student house or off-campus housing?
Mr. Chair, at this point, source of other funds revenues that are transferred to the general fund then would stay with the university system.
Okay, so it's actually there's a large number of different kinds of items.
That's correct.
In those accounts that at this point go through the general fund.
That's correct.
Would this have any implication in the event that numbers changed over a biennium? Would it have any implication for the revenue estimate, the general fund revenue estimate? I mean, if this is not in the general fund, then it can't.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it is in the general fund, and if changes are made during the biennium, does it now have an effect on the general fund
Mr. Chair, it would in the sense that the current revenue forecasts that are being made correspond to current law. So this $19.1 million would be in the general fund revenue forecast.
Mm-hmm.
If you adopt this bill, future revenue forecasts, beginning with the close of session forecast, would exclude that amount. The fact that we reduced the governor reduced the expenditures by the same amount would mean that the net impact in 07-09 would be zero, if we projected correctly.
And I'm really trying to ask a slightly different question,
right.
And that's okay. I mean that's a useful floor for the question I'm wanting to ask. When the revenue estimate is created. At the end of the year, it's based on a certain set of assumptions about what the future is going to be. If, in fact, the university system revenues earned more interest or their revenue changed because of an unexpected tuition increase or fee increase or resource fee increase or room and board increase.
Or enrollment like increases or decreases.
Enrollment increases or decreases. Under the current law, that would have an effect on the actual receipts in the general fund that might be different than what the estimate was. Is that right, or have I missed it somehow?
No, that would be correct, Ms. Chair.
If this account is set up, then those changes would have no effect on the general fund in the future.
That would be correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions?
Mr. Chair, I did understand both these bills have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
This one does. Does the other one as well? Yeah, does have a referral to Ways and Means. As I see it, our issue, the thing we're trying to figure out, is whether we think this is a good idea from a fiscal point of view. The question of the budgetary issue is Ways and Means' problem, not ours. Our problem is to decide whether we want to structure account this way as a special account, separate and distinct from the general fund. That's the issue for us. Representative Reed.
A quick question then, and maybe I'm not. This may be a faulty assumption. I wonder if this policy, to what extent that would limit your flexibility with cash flow and other things that you might be concerned about. And secondarily, if there might be a precedent established with something like this that other parts of this state agencies and so on might want the same sort of benefits.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reed, I think on a cash flow issue, this is $19 million out of about a $14 billion general fund issue. Whether it's material, I suppose, will depend on the amount of the ending balance that we have left. So I really can't speak to that. I don't think it would dramatically exacerbate a problem that may or may not exist. In terms of precedent, understand the question, but I can't really speak to what accounts at this point do or don't accrue, and I don't know what other agencies might or might not come forward with a similar proposal.
Thank you.
Of course, their cash flow is slightly different than the rest of the cash flow for the state of Oregon.
I'm sorry. I thought the question was regarding the state's cash flow issue, not the universities.
So that was my intended
right.
question, but another version.
But if we currently deposit tuition in October in the general fund, which I take it we do, and then the university spends the money out of the general fund account to pay salaries and its expenses and to buy food for the dormitory in the living units and so forth, then that's expended until December, and then they get another tuition receipt in January, for which they do the same thing again. During those several months, the state of Oregon has the use of those funds when the university is not using them. Isn't that correct?
It currently, I believe, and the treasurer may have a better answer to this than I do, but I believe that would be correct, and currently the interest in that would accrue to the general fund rather than to the account.
But I thought Representative Reed's question was a slightly different question having to do with the state's cash flow needs. We're conscious of the state's cash flow needs in this committee because they've come up in other contexts.
Perhaps I misunderstood.
And if this is a source of cash flow for the state in October and November, for example, then that might be an issue for the treasurer. We haven't heard from the treasurer, so we don't know.
Mr. Chair, on the other hand, it may be help the university's cash flow needs in those months. Currently, when we distribute state general fund to the university system, the amount, and it's distributed on a monthly basis, and the amount that we give them is not 1/24th every month. We work with them to identify their cash flow needs, and in those months that they will not be receiving tuition, they would get a larger amount of general fund, and we balance out their needs.
Thank you. That changes my understanding of the issue quite a bit, just that one little statement. Other questions for this witness? Thank you very much. We appreciate your help. Colleagues, what's your pleasure? We have three choices, it seems to me. We can do nothing. We can send the bill to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation, or we can send it to the Ways and Means Committee without a recommendation. Representative Reed?
Mr. Chair, you and I talked briefly at lunch then, and I liked one of your proposals, which was, at the risk of taking words out of your mouth, to send it without a recommendation and explain our position in support if Ways and Means Committee agrees with our hope or maybe assessment that it would be a net benefit and allow the universities to better manage their finances. And if in their judgment that's not true, that we would not be supportive. Communicate that sort of an intent without a formal recommendation.
I think my response to that is that if we think this would be a net benefit for management of funds, then we ought to recommend it. If we, and because the Ways and Means Committee still has to decide whether it's a benefit on the budget side, and they'll send it to the floor or not based on their assessment of that issue. I don't have a strong feeling about it. Representative Berger?
Anything that we all tend to sort of want to keep our own control, and fundamentally this is sort of taking a very small piece and taking control out of the hands of this body and turning it over to the universities. But we are the universities.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, we do fund the universities. I'm not wild about this proposal, Mr. Chair. I'm not wild about opposing it either. But basically, as I see it, what we're doing is we're giving them some flexibility, but by withdrawing it from this body. And I am not particularly knowledgeable about the university system and its funding and how it's so. I like Representative Reed's suggestion of sending it to Ways and Means without recommendation, just because they are far more knowledgeable. But I'm at your pleasure here. I'm just a little discomforted with taking some flexibility away from us, although I understand why the universities would want it.
And why the governor would recommend it.
Yeah.
Representative Rosenbaum, did you have something?
I was going to make a motion.
Oh, go ahead.
And to see what happens.
That's why we're here.
So I move House Bill 2198 be sent to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Rosenbaum moves the House Bill 2198 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? And let me just say, in response to the last couple of comments, I think the real issue here for us is whether or not we think this fiscally makes sense or not. From the standpoint of the governor's position that these are mostly student funds designed to support student needs at the university system, that we haven't heard anybody say that this is a significant problem for the treasurer or for the budget management, I think I'm inclined to support the motion. Other comments?
I don't think I will.
Thank you. Representative Broom?
I'm just going to say, you know, we're weighing the sort of the benefits of the university system with the benefits of the state, and I think that the benefits to the university system are great with this particular bill. I think the disbenefit, if you will, to the state is so minor compared to the overall scheme of things that net, it's a good thing to do.
Right. And it may be possible for some very bright university president to figure out how to make more money in this setting, in this system. I'm skeptical of that.
Well, and in fact, Mr. Chair, there's an article that came out, or I'm just remembering now because I only read it once, but there was an article that came out in The Economist magazine sometime last spring, last summer, that talked about the increasing amount of universities around the country that are doing this and how this helps them with their, I mean, like any institution, independent bonding, independent financial management becomes more and more critical in a tighter resource world. And this is happening not just in Oregon, it's happening around the nation, and it's sort of unhandcuffing, if you will, universities to go out and better themselves. We need to allow them to do that.
Okay, thank you. I'll consider that a speech in favor.
Yes,
Representative Berger.
And I think that the danger here is that some smart university president will find a way to really increase these funds by charging fees and tuitions that are out of bounds. And I'm not accusing anyone, certainly, of doing that now or even contemplating it within this bill. Don't get me wrong. But the students are paying this, and I think I'm just a little more comfortable with legislative control.
Thank you. I'm hoping that the Ways and Means Committee won't let that happen.
I am too.
Yeah, I suspect they won't. Further discussion? This is a motion on the bill, so we better take the roll.
Representative Bridges.
Nope.
Representative Bruman.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Excused.
Representative Gelser.
Aye.
Representative Olson.
Excused.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
And Chair Barnhart.
Chair votes aye. I get 6, 1, and 2. Is that what you get?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So having received the required majority, the motion carries, and the bill will go to the Ways and Means Committee with a do-pass recommendation. Is there anything else on this work session? If not, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2198 and open a work session on House Bill 2199. Is that yours, Madison?
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 2199, higher ed at least thinks of them as a couple of bills going in the same time. 2199 opens this ability for the higher education board to get into the bonding process and establishing some level of swaps of interest rates and instruments, and allows that flexibility in the doing the revenue bonds, the auxiliary revenue bonds, which is bonds on housing that is supported by those revenues and so on. Last time we also heard testimony from the state treasurer and others about the favorability that they look at with this bonding process. However, we also had the proposal at that time to amend the bill to have some more or remove some of the obligation, the blanket obligation that the higher board at that time was given by the bill to obligate the power of the taxing power of the state. And this is the amendments that you find in the dash one. This is the 2199. Last time it was hand in gross. This was proposed by, excuse me, DAS and the state treasurer. We've put this through legislative council, also checked with all the concerned parties who were part of this amendment, and DAS as well as the state treasurer think that it reflects what they wanted to have as controls within this process. And in this way, this bill does not necessarily have a revenue impact to its as it stands in this function. And the fiscal is also going to be happening as Joint Ways and Means receives this bill from this committee.
Thank you. Any questions about that? Mazin, as I look at the bill, it continues to say that the State Board of Higher Education or the Treasurer can do these various things that are listed on the bottom of the first page. Is the Treasurer okay with that? We have someone from the Treasury.
Mr. DOJ. Chair, members, my name is Jay Kenton. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Oregon University System.
Yes.
And this bill actually came at the suggestion of the Treasurer's Office. We work with Laura Lockwood McCall. She recommended that we move forward with this. We set up an interim committee, included DAS and Treasury in the interim, and worked with our bond counsel to get this bill in front of you today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So the fact that the fact that the treasurer is essentially, or the bill essentially allows the State Board of Higher Education to enter into these financial agreements is okay with the treasurer, obviously, if the treasurer proposed such a thing, one assumes.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, all of our bonds are handled by State Treasury, and so they are intimately involved in the structuring and issuance of those bonds, and they would continue to be involved in under this bill.
Okay, so I think what you're telling us is that the State Board of Higher Education would not act independently, even if the statute gives them authority to act independently.
Mr. Chair, that's my understanding, yes.
Thank you. Yeah, Representative Berger.
If I could ask, you said that this was entered into, there was discussed between higher ed, you representing higher ed, the treasurer's office, and DAS?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, that's absolutely correct.
On the original legislation or on the engrossment? The engrossment takes out an entire section.
Okay, I can speak to that, Mr. Chair, Representative Berger. That, you know, we worked with our bond counsel, Harvey Rogers, who actually drafted the initial legislation. That was filed as a legislative concept. Subsequent to us filing, DAS and Treasury and us agreed that, you know, the bond counsel had gone too far in certain areas, pledging the state's assets, and we agreed to the amendments that were discussed with your committee a month or so ago when you had your first hearing on this bill.
Mr. Chair, follow-up.
Yes.
The language that's left says the State of Oregon acting through the State Board of Education or the State Treasurer. There's a big or there.
That was the reason for my question.
And may enter into financial agreements. Is it possible to make that an and?
Let me ask you. Are you from DAS? Yes, please come forward. You have some information to impart on that question.
I do.
Is it Mr. Kenny?
Yes. My name's Jack Kenny. I'm the finance manager for the Department of Administrative Services Budget Management Division. And Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, to your question, the language, the or language, is consistent with the way that the bond statutes are typically structured. As Jay has alluded to, higher education cannot enter into one of these financial agreements without the approval of the State Treasury. That's the way the swap legislation is written. So the or piece of that language is simply to give the State Treasurer the authority independently. If they see a situation that they might want to take advantage of, they could do it without the higher ed.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay, so that helps me, Mr.
We're
Harris.
Not really giving this authority to the State Board of Higher Education.
Not independently.
They still have to go through the other statute that gives the treasurer control.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So do I. That's very useful. I appreciate it. We went through this. We did hear some very good testimony on this bill before from Mr. Hernsteiner and others. This issue went by fairly quickly. So obviously I wasn't the only one who missed it. Are there other questions for either of these two gentlemen? Thank you very much. We appreciate it. This proposal, if you'll recall, they think they can save $6.5 to $7 million a year over time as this thing phases in, which is the reason why we're considering this bill. Representative Rosenbaum? So this bill has to go to Ways and Means, yes.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2199 through Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum moves House.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I need to move an amendment.
Oh, let's move the amendment. Okay, we've got the motion on the floor. Go ahead and move the amendment.
I would move the dash
one.
One amendment to House Bill 2199.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum first moved House Bill 2199 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation, and then she also added a second motion to adopt the dash one amendments. Further discussion on the motion to amend. That's on the floor now. Seeing none, is there objection to the adoption of the dash one amendments? All right. Without objection, it is so ordered. So what's on the floor now is the motion to move House Bill 2199 to the Ways and Means Committee House Bill 2199 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a do-pass recommendation. Further discussion on that motion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Rosenbaum. Aye. Representative Griffin. Aye. Representative Gelsinger. Aye. Representative Rosenbaum. Aye. Representative Rosenbaum. Aye. Representative Kitt. Aye. And Chair Bowen. Chair votes aye, and the bill, the
motion having received the required majority is declared passed. And is there any other business to come up under the work session on House Bill 2199? Seeing none, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2199. And we have again exhausted our agenda, and the Revenue Committee is adjourned.
Wow.